There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Desiree is on special assignment. This is podcast number 280, June 4th, 2008. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Ferrari swag to Kyle Busch swag, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Yahoo, and of course, thank you, Stephen. On today's show, Max and his nine lives, Bridgestone and tire warmers, Kimi could care less, and Jacques Villeneuve says, I belong in NASCAR. Steve, welcome to the program and welcome to the F1Weekly.com studios. How are you today?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely outstanding. Max does it again. And I call him Teflon Max now.
What's he trying to prove? You know, all he's really doing is dragging down the FIA and motorsport in general by hanging on to a job that he would wanted to get rid of, what, 7 years ago. You know, how come he doesn't have a nice, clean successor already lined up that he can just push into the slot and he can walk away?
Yeah, and I really don't understand at his age why he wants to hang on to this FIA presidency as much as he does. I mean, I know the position is glamorous. He probably gets discounts everywhere he goes.
Yeah, especially. I'm sure if he asked nicely, Bernie would give him free passes to all the races for the rest of his life.
But, yeah, I don't know. He's bringing down the FIA and Germany, not too happy with this.
They already withdrew.
They withdrew, and, of course, the USA withdrew, which I don't think is very significant. But, hey. It could affect the monster truck races later in the year.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Americans put in quite a bit of money into the FIA to help them, you know, pay their bills.
Well, I've had it with Max, and I'm not talking about him anymore.
Okay, done with Max.
So there you have it. So now we're going to bring in the king of Karachi, the man who knows more about motorsports than Max, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Welcome to the studio, Nass. I'm glad to see the Camry is running and finely tuned.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here. Always a pleasure to be in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And how is the Emperor doing himself?
The Emperor is fine and wearing clothing.
Wow.
Exactly.
Which means we're not in Chelsea.
No, we're not. So everything is good. Nass, your quick thoughts, and we'll move on about Max.
That's what we should do, move on.
Mm-hmm. I concur. And what I'd like to bring up is an interesting article by Bridgestone rejecting the team's thoughts about really safety, and Bridgestone is saying that it's really more or less they're worrying about other teams getting an advantage, manipulating tire pressures. And Bridgestone, I think, believe that they're going to have not only a great compound for full slicks in 2009, but they believe their compound will be good enough to handle cold situations, no tire warmers, and they believe some teams are not happy with that because other teams will have an advantage. I thought that the concept was very interesting, and I think Bridgestone is bringing a very good topic to the forefront in the middle of this season, because I think this needs to be talked about.
Well, as Steve Mache had once said, that the easiest way to slow down a car is through tire rubber compound. And obviously, I have not spent much time at Goodyear or Yokohama, so I don't know anything about neoprene or compounds. So I think Bridgestone is on the right track, that they can come out with a safe tire, and which would be pretty much equal for everybody. And, teams that are not happy, they may have a hidden agenda. So I'm on Bridgestone's side on this one.
I am, too. I'm on Bridgestone's side as well. Steve, your thoughts?
I would tend to think that the tire manufacturer would have the best idea of what the tire is going to be able to do. So, yeah, I tend to agree with the gist of the article that people are probably whining more because of a perceived advantage that might be given to their competitors than anything that's really real.
Wow.
Your Highness?
This is the first time that all three of us have agreed on something.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. It's time for
all. More tea for everybody. Oh. I put something in the tea so we're much giggly.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, there you have it. Okay, let's go and just dive right in to, oh, Canada. Canada, Steve, you like this track.
Yeah, it's a reasonably good track. It's in North America. It's a fun track. I like the hairpin because, you know, it slows everybody down for that long run to the start-finish straight. And then you've got Champions Wall and just can be a fun place. And the last couple of years, it's been a real free-for-all type track where you really don't know what's going to go on. You know, didn't we have Alexander Wurz on the podium last year? It's like, huh? Where did he come from?
Well, this is the track for Sato past Alonso.
Exactly. See what I mean?
Exactly.
It can be kind of a crazy place.
Can you handle it, Clark?
So, well, not only that, but I thought it was an exciting pass, but what's really hilarious is you think that Fernando conspired to get rid of Sepúlveda Aguri right before the Canadian Grand Prix?
You never know.
You never know. I'm telling you.
Have you been to I know Des has been to Canada.
I have not.
You have not been to the Canadian Grand Prix.
I've never even stepped foot in Canada.
Wow.
But what I'm really impressed about, a few years ago, if you remember, Canada was begging to stay on the schedule for Formula One. You know, Bernie was, he had the big sword out, and he was going chop-chop here and a chop-chop there. And now they have actually done a lot of improvements to the track. I think they've put about $30 million into the paddock. And Canada now, Mr. Mario Tyson himself loves going to Montreal. This is a big favorite for a lot of the drivers, and the only North American stop now. So I'm glad to see that this is going to stay on the calendar for some time.
You know, this reference you're making to Dr. Tyson saying one of the reasons he said was it was convenient. And if you listen to Bernie's, you know, all his talk about race in Paris, maybe that's the thing he's hearing from his high-powered clientele, you know, that they want to land in an airport 2 minutes down the road, they're in a five-star hotel. In 10 minutes, they are in a Formula One race paddock club, of course.
Yeah, and then a few minutes later, they're back in their penthouse.
Yeah, exactly. But they don't care about the 90,000 hardworking people who are saving every day, planning for months. You know, those people he's not interested in.
Yeah, these are annual, you know, trips that people make and plan ahead for, like you said, months and sometimes years ahead of time. Yeah, Bernie has no clue. But I liked Mario Tyson's comments about the water and the ambiance of Montreal.
I was there too, in 2005, and I enjoyed the race very much. And my friend and I drove from Albany, so we had to come back quickly. So we did not get to see much of the city, but definitely enjoyed the stay there. And the track is very nice.
Excellent. Any predictions for this weekend's race? Obviously, Kubica coming back after his big shunt, one of the biggest shunts in many moons, and apparently it's made him a better driver. I don't know what happens, but they get knocked on the head, they become better. Of course, the track has been improved. I think that area has been completely redesigned and re-engineered. Also, Kimi Raikkonen coming into this weekend, taking a lot of heat from the Italian press. A lot of people are saying that his lifestyle is interfering. I think KK Rosberg said that his lifestyle, you know, of the rich and famous is now trickling down and taking away some of his passion of winning. A lot of people have to produce. Obviously, Felipe Massa, who should have won a couple of weeks ago, and everybody is, I mean, there's a big Massa fan club developing even on our forum, which is worrying me, but I'll let it go.
Well, you know, his situation is what once, you don't watch NFL, but there was a famous NFL coach. He said that if I have the greatest player on my team and he's just giving his 90%, I will have a problem with that. But if I have the worst player and he's giving his 140%, I'll keep him. So, and I think that's why people are beginning to like Massa. And, you know, everybody thought, a lot of people, myself, you know, especially, I thought Kimi will blow him away, and he has not done that. I mean, he did come back from a 26 deficit to win the championship, so 2-3 points is not even, that's not going to bother him. Nothing bothers him anyway, so he's going to care less about KK or anybody saying anything to him. The good thing about him is since he doesn't say a lot, he cannot get into a pissing contest with anybody.
No, and he doesn't. And he does, I honestly believe that he doesn't care what everybody thinks, including the press.
But, you know, Mr. Rogers and Mr. Favre, what I've been thinking lately about him, you know how, I mean, he is really not performing the way he should be. But, you know, like I was listening to another podcast, and they said that on Thursday he came very late to the Ferrari team. And then on over the weekend he was running on a scooter between the yard and the Columbus Hotel where he was staying. And I was thinking, you know, for him to operate the way he does, he's certainly not the committed Schumacher or a completely devoted Ayrton Senna, but for him to operate the way he does and still go as quick as he can, he must be very naturally talented. The raw speed, you know what I'm saying?
I like your positive attitude, Nasser.
Oh, thank you.
But these are the same kind of things that were brought up about him when he was at McLaren, and that he was, you know, he was out partying all night long and
right.
not buckling down and putting his best effort in at the track. I think that, you know, last year they didn't give Kimi any flack because he was winning races. I think they're kind of picking on him right now because he isn't blowing everybody away.
Mm-hmm.
But he's second in the championship in points, you know, and he didn't have a really good race in Monaco. But the Ferrari wasn't nearly as strong in Monaco as expected with the shorter wheelbase. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he does in Canada and then when we get back to Europe in a couple of weeks. But it's Kimi. You know, he's a stronger finisher anyway. He finishes the second half of the season as strong as just about anybody we know.
Absolutely. And he is the current world champion. And when you are the world champion, you're under the bigger microscope. And every mistake you make is intensified and talked about. So I think Kimi's going to do well in Canada. Let's move on quickly.
It's going to be between him or Hamilton for the win. That's my call.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But Fernando says he can be competitive in Canada, Nasser.
Who?
Fernando Alonso, world champion.
Two-time world champion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a Latino guy from España.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Nice to know him.
Yeah. I'm hoping that Kubica is also shooting for the podium. But you never know. BMW's first win is it's coming. It's around the corner. We just don't know when.
It's coming very soon.
It's coming
very soon. When both Ferraris drop out, they will have a win. A
couple of Ferraris, a few safety cars,
yeah.
Some rain.
Yeah.
It's always, you can never tell.
Yeah, when Kimi and Hamilton collide, or Kimi and Massa,
when Kimi and Hamilton take each other out the first quarter, all bets are off.
Well, we don't see that much ever since.
Yeah, very true.
Because ever since Juan Pablo Montoya left Formula One, that has definitely gone away. And I do miss a little of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, when you take out half the field, that's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, on the opening lap, sure.
That part I don't miss.
Exactly. So I have to admit the drivers are extremely responsible. And they talk about this in drivers' meetings, not making stupid mistakes. Because, this, you know, we have sponsors, we have viewers, and we have people in the stands. So the big responsibility to at least make it through the first lap.
Your call on Nelsinho Piquet, you think he's going to salvage anything?
Well, now that you've brought that.
He's part of the grid right now.
Absolutely. He's still part of the grid, believe it or not. But, you know, you're getting two sides of the coin. Some people are saying Flavio is, you know, going to give him a chance, and they're going to get him motivated. They've got the masseuse working on him right now. And then, on the other hand, I heard that DC could take his place. David Coulthard, who's a strong, solid driver. I mean, Flavio has done this before when he brought in Jacques Villeneuve to replace Trulli out of the blue.
Could it be Nelsinho is scared of the ING line on the car?
I don't know.
The orange line, you know.
Yeah, it's frightening.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's nervous. He's uncomfortable. And unfortunately, he's breaking under the pressure, unlike other drivers. He needs to, because I believe that he's comfortable with the team. Renault's a fairly comfortable team. He needs to forget about racing everybody else and focus on trying to at least keep up with Fernando. I think that's the best thing he can do.
Just put down some good laps and just, you know, kind of not really pay attention to the rest of the field and just drive the car like we know he can.
And I'm curious if he's actually asked Fernando for some advice or a piece of pie or something.
You know what advice Fernando will give him.
Yes.
Can you give me a cup of coffee?
No. You stay half a second slower than me, you have a seat next year.
Exactly. And I'll give you a bonus at the end of the year. He likes handing out those checks.
Well, yeah, from the Clark Financial Institution.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think his biggest problem, you know, like they say, it was reported that if he is sent to a smaller team like Toro Rosso, he won't be under so much scrutiny. Or, you know, people like him, you know, if you cannot run with your teammate, then you should at least finish. His problem is he does not have the pace. He has not out-qualified Fernando as yet. No wonder Alonso is happy back at Renault. So if you cannot out-qualify, at least finish the race, but he's not fast and he's going off track, so hopefully he will salvage something. But, you know, the Canadian track always has safety cars and people are hitting the wall. I don't think it will be a good – not that I wish him that, but I don't think it will be a good weekend for him.
And once again, Flavio is going to have to make a decision. And I do not see Piquet finishing this season for sure.
I'll be very, very surprised if he I said the same thing about Adrian Sutil, that he after British he may not be there. But Monaco has done a great thing for his
That's brought him a couple, three extra races at least.
Yeah.
But still, and Sutil is already warning everybody of high expectations. You know, I think that was a one-off.
Yeah.
But a lot of things conspired to get him where he was at.
The thing is about him, which was noticed by everybody, that in the dry he has not been as quick as Fisichella, and that's no barometer of success.
And not only that, but a lot of people have criticized Renault for they should have probably have kept Fisichella, who's a strong, steady driver who can finish the races and get the points. Because really, that's what Nelsinho should be doing and needs to be doing.
Yeah, he can at least get a point or two every race.
Yeah,
most of the races.
And if he can, he'll keep his job.
Yeah.
Because I think the Renault car as a package is good enough to get a few points a race right now. But
would you say anything else, Mr. Rogers?
That's my job.
Okay.
I got to get those checks from Flavio.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Also, a number of other drivers need to do well who didn't do so good. One of them is David Coulthard. I mean, once again, he doesn't finish in Monaco. Takes in his compadre, Sebastian Bourdais of Toro Rosso.
Though that wasn't his fault necessarily this time.
It wasn't DC's fault, but...
But the fact
it's,
that...
It's like Montoya. He's like the new Montoya. Something goes wrong, he's there.
He's a magnet. And the other thing, too, is that he's finished one race all year. It's like he's going to have to do a little better than that if he expects to stick around much longer.
Exactly, because the talk about Vettel stepping into that seat this season is already on the surface. And I think so many things can happen. The Piquet, the Vettels, the Coulthards. I don't know.
You think Flavio will put Marco in place of Piquet?
It's possible.
No.
You never know. You never know. But and Romain Grosjean, who I think
that's kind of a long shot.
Has not had enough testing time in the Formula One car is definitely a long shot.
Well, they have a guy, your hero, Muy Macho Hombre de España, Mr. Alonso, who can win races and championship if the package is available. So I think they should just bring back Fisichella or somebody like a DC who will be no threat to Alonso, but knows how to bring a car home. But, you know, unfortunately, you cannot say that now about DC these days.
Yeah, you can't, because that would be politically incorrect.
No, factually incorrect, too.
Factually. Because right now, you can tell that Red Bull's got a decent package right now, the way Mark Webber's been finishing.
And that's a pretty decent package.
But DC can't get the car home.
The Renault Adrian Newey package is working well. They've got dependability problems whipped from last year. They're not having the hydraulic and the gearbox problems. They've got a good car, and Mark Webber has been consistently finishing in the points.
Yeah, you know, this Swiss magazine Motorsport Actuel was saying that they had this thing going on. Piquet will go to Toro Rosso, and Sebastian Vettel will go to Red Bull, and DC will come here. But you know, Flavio, you never know the guy.
He does put together some strange deals.
Yeah, as long as at the end when the ink dries and he has $10 million in his pocket, you know, that can be a deal.
I think so too. I mean, I'm on his side for all that.
But you know, someday he will retire. The everlasting memory I will have of Flavio is during that great 2005 U.S. Grand Prix. If you ever watch it on TV, they show him, like, I don't know, halfway through the race or whatever. They catch him and he's talking to somebody in the pit lane. He says, "I predict Schumi first, Barrichello second. You want to bet?"
Yeah, he was pretty funny. At least he kept everybody laughing in the paddock.
Yeah.
While we were all using our finger.
You were there too, right?
Of course. I attended all the U.S. Grand Prix.
Me too. And in 2005, we did not know each other.
We didn't.
Yeah, amazing.
But I felt the love.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly. So quickly, let's wrap it up. Any thoughts on Canada, Stephen?
I'm looking forward to it. Should be a good race. Hopefully it won't be red and silver at the front. We'll get some other colors up there, but it's probably going to be a McLaren-Ferrari joust.
Wow, you're really going out on a limb, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
McLaren, forget it. I'm saying BMW gets their first win this weekend in Canada. Bada bing, bada boom.
Actually, the bet should be, how many people are going to run the red light in the pits in Canada this year?
Only one person. Rubinho.
The race, I believe, in the U.S. is on Fox Sports, if I'm not mistaken.
It's on Channel 2. Yeah, it's right? On Fox Sports. There.
It's not on Speed TV.
It's on Fox.
I'm really glad that I do the show so I can get this information. I had no clue.
Well, yeah, here
well, if you watch the NASCAR race on Sunday, you'd hear this.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with the king of sports himself and, of course, Motorsports Mondial. So we'll be back after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now for everybody's favorite segment, as we spin the globe and go around the world with the King of Karachi and the Swami of Motorsports, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nasser, welcome back. Hope the dinner was good. How are you?
Thank you, sir. Enjoying my Lipton tea here.
Of course, which is free.
Even better. And as always, greetings and racing regards to all the listeners. And a special hello to Dr. Mark Farrington from UK. He's now on the Eastern Seaboard in Boston attending a conference and sent me an email. He will be driving to Canada for the Canadian Grand Prix.
Good for him, and he could listen to F1Weekly.com, a familiar voice that will make that drive more pleasant and beautiful.
And he will hopefully send us some report and some scoop from Montreal.
Some dirt from Montreal?
Yes, and we look forward to it.
Absolutely.
And before I get into this Motorsports Mondial, I would like to invite our listeners to listen to a conversation after this with Esteban Gutierrez. He's a young, talented Mexican driver. He raced here in the United States last year in Formula BMW, was Rookie of the Year, very impressive performance, won races, and now he's racing in the Formula BMW Europe. In the first round in Spain when I was there, he was on the podium in both races, and this past Sunday at Zolder, he won both the races and is now leading the championship. Very good young talent, nice kid. So please stay tuned for an interview with Señor Esteban Gutierrez after the Motorsports Mondial and the usual silliness we do at the end.
Exactly. Nasser, keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. And headlines for this edition are 7-Up for Rossi, Briscoe bruises first in Milwaukee, BMW wins the street fight in Poe, high five for Sebastian Loeb, vacancy at DC's hotel, and that Bush is a monster at Dover. We're talking about Kyle Busch.
Of course.
Before
this is
I
not
get,
a political program.
No, otherwise I'll be deported.
Exactly.
Thank you. Okay, we'll start with MotoGP from Mugello, and all Italian weekend, as all three races in different categories, 125, 250, and the MotoGP were won by Italian riders. So it was a big day for the Tifosis. Starting from pole position, Valentino Rossi had a captive audience and thrilled the 96,000-strong spectators with his seventh successive MotoGP win at Mugello.
He's really turned it around.
He has, and he is just the mayor of Mugello now. Seven times in a row he has won. Actually, he has won two more times in different other categories. So nine wins at the same track. And, of course, this track is owned by Ferrari. Great race for the lead and a great battle between Casey Stoner and Danny Pedrosa, in which the defending champion from Australia prevailed over the young Spaniard to grab second place. And as I'm sure most of our listeners would know, because they are smart people, Stoner is on a Ducati and Mr. Pedrosa is on a Honda. Rossi also won the last two races, so this is his third win in a row, and now leads the championship with 122 points. Pedrosa is second on 110 points. Colin Edwards was the highest-placed American in fifth. Nicky Hayden was 13th. And Barcelona is next off for MotoGP this coming weekend. So we will have a Formula One race and a MotoGP. From the hills of Tuscany, we go to the streets of Pau near the Pyrenees. Pau, in the south of France, held its famous annual racing festival over the weekend, featuring F3 Euro Series and a round of World Touring Car Championship. Harum scarum in race one of F3 Euro Series, British driver James Jakes won the race from pole position. Only 10 of the 30 starters were running at the end. Italian Eduardo Mortara was second, and John Lancaster, who, like James Jakes, is from Britain, was third. Canadian Robert Wickens, making his debut in this series, was ninth. Only American in the race, Charlie Kimball, was out after six laps. In race two, Mortara took the win, giving Volkswagen, also known as VW in the U.S., their first win as engine supplier this year. Second was Dutch driver Renger van der Zande, and Danny Close, who I believe is from Spain, was third. Robert Wickens was eighth, and Kimball was 23rd. Mortara now leads the championship by 14 points as both main title rivals Mika Maki and Nico Hülkenberg failed to score in race two. Next race on the schedule is also a street fest at Nürburgring in Germany on June 29th. And this is the track where Mexican Pedro Rodriguez was killed in 1971 in a sports car race. In the World Touring Car Championship race, also at Pau, Brazilian driver Augusto Farfus gave BMW their first win of the season. Alex Zanardi, who also drives a BMW, was 12th. Race 2 was another Beamer victory, this time with British driver Andy Priaulx at the wheel, and Mr. Zanardi was 11th. From WTCC, we go to BTCC, British Touring Car Championship at Croft. Winners were race 1, Colin Turkington in his BMW 320 SI over the Vauxhall of Matt Neal. Race 2, Turkington again, but this time by a wee bit whisker over fellow BMW driver Matt Jackson. Race 3, Italian Fabrizio Giovanardi in his Vauxhall Vectra over the Seat Leon of Adam Jones. and Giovinardi retains lead in the championship. And this is interesting, Clark. According to their website, which is www.croftcircuit.co.uk, racing at Croft can be traced back as far as the 1920s. And among the deals available at the track, you can take a Lamborghini Murcielago course, which includes four laps in the beast for only 350 quid, which is about $700. Trump change for you.
The F1 Weekly company picnic will be at Croft.
Oh, lovely. The track layout reminds me of Monza, and we would like to hear from our listeners who have visited the track their thoughts on it. IndyCar racing at the Milwaukee Mile. Australian Ryan Briscoe scored his first victory in IRL and became the 15th different driver to win a race in top tier of American open wheel racing for Captain Roger Penske. Indy 500 winner Scott Dixon was second and Tony Kanaan third. Next race is this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway.
How did Danica Patrick do?
Danica Patrick had a decent day, but was not in the top five, and it was good to see that she was not looking for some driver to pick a fight.
Excellent.
And, you know, what happened with her at Indy, and these things happen, but what I've noticed, you know, anytime she has a situation, she does want to confront the driver, and it's only a matter of time before she steps on the wrong toes, you know. I mean, she has a situation down the road with a Paul Tracy or a Montoya or a Robbie Gordon. You know, these people are not shy.
Well, I remember Schumacher charging the DC Paddock in 98 at Spa.
Yeah.
That was very similar to Danica.
And how is she going to take it if she takes somebody out and they confront her?
No, I think most drivers will. They know better.
They're professionals?
No, you're not going to win a fight with Danica. We all know that. ABC and all of America is on her side. Anyway, World Rally Championship. This will be of interest to you, sir. Fifth win of the season for Sebastian Loeb and his Citroën in the famous Acropolis Rally in Greece. The new Subaru Impreza had an impressive first outing, with Petter Solberg finishing second. Mikko Hirvonen was third in his Ford Focus. Loeb now leads the championship by 1 point from Hirvonen. Next round, Rally of Turkey, or as the natives would call, Rally of Turkey, from June 13th to June 15th. Some news from the Le Mans circuit, Le Mans 24-hour race is coming up. Are you going to spend some time watching this race, sir?
Absolutely.
Really?
I always do.
Good. Marc Gené, Spanish driver, had a big accident on Sunday in his Peugeot during testing and suffered minor injuries. The car flipped over. It was a pretty big bang. And I was reading his quote on the web that he thought he was going to die.
Yeah, and he won't be attending the Canadian Grand Prix as a spare Ferrari driver.
But he plans to take part in the qualifying, which is coming up. And I think he's teamed up with Monsieur Jacques Villeneuve.
Exactly.
The 76th running of this classic event takes place this month. And, this is part of our Joe Satriani segment, basically, Surfing with the Alien. Talking of Le Mans, there is a very nice article on www.motorsport.com titled France's Successful Past at Le Mans, and this was posted on June 2nd. Mr. Rogers, you would be proud to read this. And this is Motorsport without the S at the end. So motorsport.com. You should read it. It's very nice.
I'll take a look at it now. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Very nicely written. Now we go from Le Mans. We can only go to
Le NASCAR.
Trucks and Cups and Nationwide Series were all in action at the Monster Mile. The man from Manteca, Scott Speed, who has gone from Saint-Devote in a Formula One car to Dover, Delaware in a Toyota pickup, finally scored his first win. Our congratulations to him. The Nationwide Series race was won by Denny Hamlin in a Toyota, and in the main event for the Cup boys, this was another Toyota triumph as Kyle Busch took his fourth win of the season. Carl Edwards was second and Greg Biffle third. Montoya was 12th and Patrick Carpentier from Canada was 29th. Now here is the interesting part, Mr. Rogers. Now that half of the NASCAR season is over, let's take a look at the points scored so far, and it only gets better. Kyle Busch leading with 2,050 points. Now remember, 2,050 points only. Jeff Burton is second with 1,908 points, and Dale E., who has not won a race in over 2 years, is third with 1,779 points. And this is the best part. You know how the chase works. I think the top 13 drivers go into the final round, which would be the last 10 races.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and they all go back to zero.
Yeah. Oh, no, no, no. There's
they can't
no
go back to zero.
They race at zero. They can't go back to zero. Those making the chase will each start with 5,000 points plus 10 bonus points for each race victory. So Kyle Busch has four wins, so he's not going to start with minimum 5,040 points.
So this is really similar to frequent flyer miles. When you sign up with a program, I think you get free 5,000 points. So I think this is based on frequent flyer program.
Yeah, and you can redeem these for a year's supply of hot dogs.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Nasser.
Thank you.
Cautions.
Okay, DC going out of business. Dakota Sherwood Park Hotel, owned by David Coulthard in Nottingham, England, has gone into receivership. Reason? Unresolved issues between owners and some missing millions. So I have a feeling that soon DC will be receiving a check with another zero from the Clark Rogers Savings and Thrift.
Of course. We're always funding and helping people out throughout the world.
You certainly put a smile on a lot of faces.
I do. And that we're not talking just charm.
Oh, no. Okay, now we also, I forgot to mention this, on the occasion of the Canadian Grand Prix coming up, we also have a history of Canadian Grand Prix, and we hope this is as tasty as a Tim Horton donut, eh? Shall we do it now? Shall we take a break? What do you make the call, sir. IBM presents You Make the Call.
I am the host, and we are now doing a historical segment on the Canadian Grand Prix.
Thank you. The world of Formula One has landed in the Americas in five different countries, starting with Argentina in 1953. After the United States in 1959 and Mexico in 1963, Canada was the fourth nation in the Americas to host a World Championship Grand Prix. Brazil is the fifth nation and the most consistent since their first championship race in 1973. And for the purposes of this history, I'm not counting the Indy 500, which was part of the World Championship. O Canada marked its centennial with their maiden Grand Prix in 1967. The race over 90 laps was held at Mossport Park on August 27th. Pole sitter Jim Clark from Scotland was the early leader in the rain in his Lotus but would not finish the race. Jack Brabham from Australia was the winner in his own car, followed by a teammate from New Zealand, Denny Holm, who went on to become the world champion of that season, which would be 1967. Final man on the podium was the ever-smiling Dan Gurney from Southern California in his own Westlake-powered Eagle. Duration of the race was over 2 hours and 40 minutes, so they were pretty much on the half of the NASCAR program. The only driver who failed to qualify in his Cooper Climax was named Tom Jones, and I'm not making this up. And it's not unusual for a privateer to be out of the race. This Tom Jones is from Texas, not Wales. And I understand he runs some sort of a machine fabrication business these days in Ohio.
Good for him.
Yeah. The second running of the Canadian Grand Prix in 1968 was also over 90 laps, but this time at a different location. The beautiful Mont Tremblant at Saint-Jovite in Quebec was the venue. Rising Austrian star Jochen Rindt was on pole in his Brabham but retired with overheating problems. The year before, Denny Holm finished second behind his employer. In 1968, he reversed that and won the race ahead of his new employer, which was fellow countryman Bruce McLaren from New Zealand, of course. So the Kiwis were flying high in Quebec in 1968. Mexican Pedro Rodriguez was third for BRM, which brings us to the 1969 race. The race returned to Mossport Park. 24-year-old Belgian driver Jackie Ickx won the race from pole position in his Brabham. Mr. Brabham himself finished second with Jochen Rindt third, now driving for Colin Chapman's Lotus team. Pedro Rodriguez drove the only Ferrari in the race and failed to finish, and his car was entered by Luigi Canetti's North American racing team. A local driver, Al Pease, was black flagged for being too slow. And my understanding is, I'm not 100% sure on this, that this is the only occasion where a driver was black flagged in Formula One race for being too slow. And if somebody knows of another one, please let us know. Now we come to 1970, Mont Tremblant Saint-Jovite again. Dramatic debut for Ken Tyrrell's team with their own chassis as Jackie Stewart grabs pole position from the Ferrari of Jackie Ickx. The Belgian went on to win for the second year in a row with teammate from Switzerland, Clay Regazzoni, who was also known as Rega, in second place. Chris Amon from New Zealand was third in his March. Mosport was made the official home of Canadian Grand Prix starting with the 1971 event. Jackie Stewart won the race from pole position in his Tyrrell. Ronnie Peterson from Sweden also led the race but finished second ahead of an impressive debutant, Mark Donohue, in a Roger Penske-entered McLaren. Another American, Skip Barber of Racing School fame, also drove in this race but was not running at the end. 1972, two in a row for Team Tyrrell and Jackie Stewart. Peter Revson finished second after starting from pole position in his McLaren. Teammate Denny Holm was third. 1973, who really won? Some are still asking this question. Pole sitter Ronnie Peterson in a Lotus shared the front row with Peter Revson in a McLaren. It was a wet race and confusion reigned after the pace car failed to pick up the race leader. It was several hours before the race winner was decided and Peter Revson was the beneficiary, the second and final Grand Prix win of his career. Emerson Fittipaldi was second and Jackie Oliver third for Shadow, the same Jackie Oliver who won Le Mans in 1969 with Jackie Ickx in a Ford GT40 and later ran the Arrows Formula One team. And Mr. Rogers, as we were talking before the show, this beautiful Ford GT40 of John Wire team in Gulf colors, it is probably one of the most beautiful racing cars in the world for me, along with that blue Matra MS120. And folks, we have some photographs, thanks to Ye, on the forum. So if you want to look at this beautiful car, Gulf colors, please do so. Now we come to the 1974 Canadian Grand Prix. Emerson Fittipaldi won the race to inch closer to his second world championship, as this was the penultimate round of the season. His challenger, Clay Regazzoni, fought off a late race challenge from Ronnie Peterson to finish second. The Canadian race saw the debut of two new teams in Formula One, both from south of the border. Those were the days, two American teams in Formula One. Penske Racing had their Indy 500 winner, Mark Donohue, as driver, and Wells Parnelli Jones Racing had Viceroy as the sponsor and Mario Andretti as driver. No Canadian Grand Prix in 1975, but the return of the race in 1976 marked the third consecutive win for McLaren driver as James Hunt takes the win. Patrick Depailler from Clermont, France was second in his six-wheel Tyrrell with Mario Andretti from Nazareth, PA, third for Lotus. 1977 final race at Mosport Park turned out to be the final Grand Prix win for Wolf Racing Team, which was started by Austrian-born Canadian oilman Walter Wolf. Driver was Jody Scheckter from South Africa, who started the season in high style, giving Wolf team a Grand Prix win on their debut in Argentina. So imagine winning your very first Grand Prix. And that car was designed by Dr. Harvey Postlewhite. Patrick Depailler was again second and Jochen Maas was third. And Jochen Maas is from Germany and he was a teammate to Mr. Hunt. And he was the guy whom Villeneuve hit at Zolder when he was killed. This race also marked the debut of local superstar Gilles Villeneuve for Ferrari. The world champion Niki Lauda walked out on Enzo Ferrari before the race. And when I say debut of Gilles Villeneuve, that was the debut for Ferrari. Earlier in the year, he made his Grand Prix debut in the McLaren at Silverstone. 1978, man-made island Île de Notre-Dame is the new home of the Canadian Grand Prix. Lotus recruited French driver Jean-Pierre Jarier. Remember him?
Yeah.
Also known as Jumper.
Hipster.
Yeah. He was recruited to replace the late Ronnie Peterson, who was, of course, killed at Monza, unfortunately. Jarier took the pole and had a commanding lead when he retired with no brakes, 20 laps before the end. The crowd got what they paid for. Second place man holding on to the lead to score his first Grand Prix win in front of his countrymen. Of course, that man was Gilles Villeneuve. More success and joy for the fans as Canadian-owned team of Walter Wolf was second with Scheckter driving. Villeneuve's teammate Carlos Reutemann from Argentina was third. And Bobby Rahal, Papito of Graham Rahal, also drove in this race for Walter Wolf but did not finish. 1979, Alan Jones won the race from pole position in a Williams, but local hero Villeneuve put on a strong challenge and was only a second behind at the end. Second, Williams of Clay Regazzoni was third. And of course, that year, Williams scored the first Grand Prix on home soil at Silverstone. Regazzoni was the driver. Niki Lauda, now driving for Bernie-owned Brabham team, was again in the news, this time bailing out not only from the race but from Formula One, saying he was tired of going around in circles. You remember that famous quote?
Mm-hmm. Shocking.
Yeah. 1980, victory in the race made Alan Jones the first Australian world champion since Jack Brabham in 1966. His teammate Carlos Reutemann was second. French driver Didier Pironi was the first to take the checkered flag, but a one-minute penalty for jumping the start dropped him to third. Another Francais, Jean-Pierre Jabouille, had a big accident and broke his legs. This was the end of the Formula One career for the man who gave Renault and Turbo their first Grand Prix win in 1979 at...
He's off! He's back again! It's incredible! Dijon Prenois.
I love that place. I was at the Dijon train station once when I was taking the train from England to Italy to go to Monza, 1982. And when the train pulled for a few minutes into the Dijon station and I saw that sign, Dijon.
Chills.
I was chilled and frisson and freeze frame. And I just kept looking at the sign and thought about the race 3 years earlier.
And the mustard's pretty good, too.
Oh, I'm sure. Thank you. Okay, now we come to what? We come to 1980. More info here. In the 1980 race, Mike Thackwell from New Zealand became the youngest driver to start a Formula One race at the age of 19 years, 5 months, and 29 days. Some people dispute that because the race was black flag, so it's another whole story. And Mike Thackwell is a very interesting story. What can happen to a very young, promising career and how it can get derailed and totally destroy a lot of dreams. And we'll have it as part of a motorsports Mondial one day. Interesting story. Sad, but interesting story how things happen in his career. 1981, local hero Gilles Villeneuve made it to the podium in third place behind the McLaren of Irishman John Watson, who is now doing commentary for A1GP Racing, and race-winning Talbot Ligier-Maitre of Jacques Lafitte. Villeneuve's brother Jacques failed to qualify his arrows. Slim Borgud from Sweden qualified but failed to finish. His claim to fame, he was the drummer for ABBA. He took a chance on GP, but the beat was very different in the fast lane. Now we come to 1982, which will conclude part one of the history of Canadian Grand Prix, the first 25 years. 1982, start of the race, saw tragedy in between tragedies that marked the 1982 Formula One season. Mr. Rogers, where were you in 1982?
1982? Mm-hmm. I was in a rock band touring around the San Francisco Bay Area, opening for people like...
ABBA.
No, who's...
A group with no name?
No, it's...
Grateful Dead?
No, the gentleman, Mr. Bo Diddley. Oh, I have met and opened up for Bo Diddley back in the 80s. My claim to fame. Thank you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm a machismo.
I can tell. Okay. We were talking about the 1982 race. Didier Pironi dedicated his pole, and this is another sad story, and I don't know if it's true, but I'll share it with listeners. Earlier in the season, Villeneuve was killed at Zolder. In Canada, Didier Pironi dedicated his pole position to his fallen teammate. And I've read somewhere a few times, and one day I will get a chance to talk to, I think it was Keke Rosberg, who is credited with saying that, you know, when he did that, Keke Rosberg said to some fellow driver or somebody that, well, if it was not for Didier Pironi, he would still be here. So a lot of bad blood between a lot of drivers in that time frame. And unfortunately, at the start, Pironi stalled his Ferrari and was hit at high speed by the Osella of young Italian driver Riccardo Poletti, who I believe was only in his second Grand Prix. While the medics were attending to him, the car caught fire, but it was probably too late, and poor Poletti died in the hospital a few hours later. And there's a town in Italy, I think it's called Verano, where they have a track named after Riccardo Poletti. Pironi restarted in his spare car, but could not finish in the points. Our beloved Nigel Mansell in a Lotus broke his wrist after colliding with the Alfa Romeo of Bruno Giacomelli. Brazilian Nelson, you know, you're talking about BMW winning. Well, listen to this. Nelson Piquet gave BMW their first Grand Prix win as an engine supplier. Teammate Riccardo Patrese was second and John Watson third in his McLaren. And that's the first 25 years of Formula One racing in the land of Gretzky and JV. Folks, enjoy the Canadian Grand Prix this weekend, and thank you for listening. And next week, we'll have some more history on the Canadian Grand Prix.
Nasser, keep up the good
Clark.
Work. Another outstanding historical perspective from the king of Karachi.
Thank you, sir. It will taste even better if you enjoy it with some maple syrup.
Thank you very much, Nass. We'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
And now, Nasser, another great interview, which you did in Barcelona. And, of course, this is a driver from Mexico, land of machismo. Introduce this driver, please.
Okay, this conversation is with Esteban Gutierrez, and last year he raced here in the United States, Formula BMW USA, and he's from the Mexican town of Monterrey. And last year, you know, I was talking to a few team owners here in the United States, and I kept hearing his name, and they kept telling me, not only is he a good, very good driver, but also a very good kid. So I finally got the chance to meet him in Barcelona, and I found him just the way I was told he would be. He was on the podium in both races. You know, they have two races like most feeder series. He was on podium on both in both races. Then this past weekend, they were racing at Zolder, Belgium, and he won both the races and is now leading the championship. And, of course, if you, you know, do very well and you go to the finals and you win the world finals at the end of the year in Valencia, you get to drive the BMW Formula One car. So Esteban is a good family. I met the mom and dad also. He has a great future ahead, and hopefully he will keep moving forward. And, you know, we will talk to him more. And again, thanks to Mr. Manzoor, our listener in England, previously in England, now in Italy, for allowing me access into the BMW paddock and arranging these interviews. So my thanks to everybody who is helping us.
Okay, I'm here in Barcelona with Señor Esteban Gutierrez, all the way from Monterrey, Mexico. Esteban, how are you today?
Very, very good. Very happy for the result today. It's very great weather. The event was also, you know, very emotional and a lot of things happening in the race.
Like what? What was emotional? Tell me, apart from your two podium finishes, which I must say, very, you know, happy for you. Congratulations. So what was the emotional part?
Well, the emotional part was, you know, in the qualifying, I didn't finish quite well. I was fifth for the first race, fourth for the second. I had some traffic on the qualifying. But then on the race, the very emotional thing was that I started fifth, and then I managed to get two people in one corner. It was quite interesting and hard. So, yes, I took the opportunity, and I finished third. And then the second race, you know, was very, very tight. I was really pushing very, very hard. And, you know, I was very relaxed on the race. You know, I was just enjoying the driving, and that's why I always enjoy doing this, and that's what I always think. So, and then trying to pass Tambe and everything, you know, that makes racing a little bit more interesting then.
Your mom was telling me yesterday that your first love was basketball. And what happened there that brought you into racing? Tell us about that, please.
Well, my cousins were racing karts when I came back from living from France. I lived 1.5 years in France. And then I asked my parents if they would buy me a kart in Mexico. So, you know, I started just as a hobby, in mentality, not, you know, I didn't really expect much, you know, from me. And so I just, you know, when I go first of all, in basketball, I was good as well. It was a team, but you know, I always liked very, very much cars and things that had wheels, not just cars, but I also like motorcycles, I like bicycles, and you know, all those kinds of things. So I saw the opportunity to, and my parents gave me the opportunity. I'm very pleased with that, because without them it wouldn't be possible doing this, with the support of my family. So then me and my brother, Andres Gutierrez, one of my brothers, one of my five brothers, started with me in karting, so everything went very well at the beginning. We were Mexican champions both, and we had the opportunity to enjoy the Rotax World Finals in 2005. And then next year I was fourth Mexican, and then a friend came up to Formula BMW, and then in 2006, and then for 2007 I also tried to keep pushing, and then I saw a good opportunity getting up to Formula BMW. It was a little bit hard to convince my parents, but you know, they had supported me very well, and I'm very happy that I can be here representing my country in Europe.
Now, you raced last year in Formula BMW USA, and you did a very good job. I saw you race in San Jose, which is where we are based out of. How was that experience racing in the US, and what was your favorite track there?
Well, it's very different from Europe. You know, in Europe, there's a little bit more competitiveness. I mean, it's not that there is more competitiveness, but a lot of people are really pushing hard, and the gap is closer between more guys. And in USA, it's quite the same. I had a big fight with Morad all the season. So I really learned a lot of things from there, things that you are going to take in the future, as not only in racing career, but also for my life, you know, for a person. And yes, I think it was a very good decision to do next Formula BMW Europe, to get a next step and more competitive and a little bit more emotionless.
Now, talking about Daniel Murad, there were some other drivers who were quick. What do you like when you're racing? Do you want to have a good fight with a driver, or do you like where, you know, some guy checks out and wins without any competition? What's more fun as a racing driver?
As a racing driver, I think it's more fun to enjoy. Think that you are there to enjoy, not to have stress. Obviously, you get nervous before a race. But I really like, you know, enjoying the car. Try to feel the each corner, what the car do, and yeah, try to manage and try to fix the car and work with the team. It's very, 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 very passionate, you know. And I also like to have some fights as well. Last year with Morad, it was very, very good fights, fairly fights. We didn't have contact any race, so that's what I like, and that's, I think, the best thing for a driver to do.
From the season last year in the U.S., what was the high point for you, and what were some of the disappointments? Because there are many highs and many lows in this business.
Yeah, you always have that in everything you do in life. It's always sometimes good, sometimes bad. But yes, for example, I started very good in Miller Motorsports Park with qualifying, my first race ever. It was I made a double pole position for 3/10 gap, so it was quite interesting. And then as well, when I went to Road America after a not so good race, I'm sorry, I went to Lime Rock and then to San Jose, which was a very good race. I started dead last and then went to 4, and then Road America was also good. I started dead last and I went to 2nd by 0.004, so it was very, very interesting.
Your favorite track in North America?
Road America, for sure.
That's what everybody says. Now, in the racing here in Europe, you are with the Josef Kaufmann team. What led you to this particular team, and did you test with other teams also?
Yes, I did test with Muke. I tested with Fortec. I made a Hockenheim race with Fortec. And then with Kaufmann, you know, it's I had also many offers from the new teams from GP2. But, you know, it was my second year, so I'm really pleased with them that tried to give me the opportunity to be on their team. But then I tested them, and, you know, it was my second year, and I had to decide to go into a team with experience in BMW, because it's not always the same to be a good team and then go into a new category, a new first time. So Kaufmann, it's a team that it's different from others. You know, it's like a family. Lars Kaufmann, it's the son of Josef Kaufmann, the owner of the team. And Josef, it's the engineer of the three cars. So I really like the, you know, the chemistry the chemic between us, and I really enjoy being in the team and working with them.
In your two teammates, your teammate is Kazim, and who was your other teammate? And
Marco Whitman,
who has 1 year experience. How is the chemistry between the three drivers?
We've been, getting to know each other. Obviously, you always have competitiveness between each other, and that's racing about. So I always try to learn, something from every person, from every driver, especially from Kazim. I had a very good reference in the start. He made a very, very good start yesterday, and I analyzed the data, and that helped me a lot for today, And if you work as a team and you get those little details each other, and because sometimes Kazim is faster, sometimes Marco is faster, sometimes me, I'm faster in some corners, and working as a team, you can really make to push the team and try not just one person of the team winning, but try to push everybody to be a strong team,
Have you learned from Kimi Raikkonen how to party?
How to party? Well, yeah, I like to party with my friends back in Mexico, but when I'm in racing mode, I don't really party that much.
That was a joke. Who is guiding you and managing your career right now?
Managing my career, it's my family and me. We really don't have any representative right now. We have a press release representative, media representative. It's Marx Granados. And he's helping me with all the media and everything. And we have also Rick Gorn that's helping us get some sponsors and try to, all his opinions and everything. But we are not compromised with anybody right now.
And what is your goal for next year? I mean, I know right now you have to take care of this year's season. What's the game plan for next year?
Well, for next year, if everything goes, first of all, as you say, we have to finish this season. I like to concentrate a lot on what I'm doing in the present and not think too much on the future. But we obviously have some plans, and I think the best option for me would be Formula 3, German Formula 3, before going into Euro Series, or it depends on what things I do. I really don't have a compromise, so I'm really, really relaxed, and step by step would be the nicest thing.
No, it's a good idea to go German F3 and then Euro Series. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? And we have a lot of listeners in South America. So if you could say something in English and a few words in Spanish, I will appreciate.
Yes, for sure. I mean, they've all supported me very well in America. Me being as a Mexican, I really like to say that I also represent America. That's always, I think, that. It's my continent, also it's South Americans and North Americans. So I just tell them thank you very much for the support they gave me. And from Mexico, the support I had from the newspaper in Mexico, like you guys, and the web pages, like you guys. And yes, I really appreciate the support they're giving me.
This last question just came into my mind. You were in France, you said, for a year and a half. Did you ever try escargot?
Sorry, what?
Did you ever try escargot?
No, I've never tried that. Escargot, it's
the snail they eat.
Oh, escargot. Yeah. No, I've not. I don't like those kinds of things. They look really nasty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Very nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Esteban, thank you for joining F1Weekly.com.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And we're up against the clock again, but we have time for one email. Steven?
This email's from Mike Speed, and he writes about track improvements. Every now and then we hear that Bernie is going to take events away from various venues unless they upgrade. It was Spa a couple of years ago and Silverstone today. How about Montreal? They just spent $5.5 million on garage upgrades and safety improvements for this year, their 30th. Bernie never had to hold a gun to their head. They just want to race. I think that I am done thinking the tracks are the victims. Maybe Tony George needs to take a lesson. It is still a good deal to have an F1 race at your track. And in your town, reminds me of the NFL. The owners aren't happy making $18 million a year. They want $30 million a year, so they get rid of the salary cap. Does money make you this way, or do you just have to be this type of person to make money? No wonder I'm poor. See you in Montreal, Mike Speed. Thanks, Mike.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and thank you, Mike. Real quickly, before I go into the thank yous, there was a little poem on the forum written by Ye. Once again, this guy's skills and talent are just oozing, and I hate to put this stuff to waste, so I'm going to sing it for the people.
Ding, 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 ding.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens,
bling,
bright
bling.
Copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, Lotus 49s with downdraft carbs. Here are a few of Nasser's favorite cars. There you have it. I couldn't resist.
Thank
that
you,
was
Ye.
Beautiful. Yay. Keep up the good work. Okay, the wrap-up. I want to thank Martin Caton at Caton Designs for coming up with a fantastic new sticker. It's going to be available soon. We still got to get printing done and all that. But it's going to be the GrandPrixWeekly.com sticker. So we are now politically correct in the European field of activity. So thanks, Caton Designs. Keep up the good work, Martin. And, of course, their website is www.catondesigns.com, Ness.
I also would like to thank them personally and professionally for a job very well done.
Yes, these guys are professionals and also F1.
And when they come to California, Krispy Kreme donuts on us.
Excellent. Yeah. Keep up the good work, Nass.
You can find a link to them on our links page.
Exactly. Also, real quickly, I want to mention our MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as our friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody on the program, including Nasser Hamid, Steve Faub, David Tapia, Toby Dawes, and beautiful New York, and Desiree up on the Northern California coastline. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.